The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
So for me, what happened was that people started like seeing a transformation in me. I started talking about just with friends, because this was before really, I mean, there was a little bit of Facebook, but before social media really took hold, it was just really conversations, and people were seeing that I was able to go off of some medications that I'd been on, inhalers that I'd been on, to treat bronchial asthma. Not to say that food and lifestyle will completely clear people of having to go on medication.
No, but it gets rid of a lot of it. Yeah.
Right. It really does. And so anxiety started coming down. My health improved exponentially. I just started looking healthier. And so people started asking me, what are you doing? And then, so I started sharing with them, and I started taking friends to Whole Foods, and I started teaching friends how to cook, and I started doing meditation with other people, and I started doing breathing exercises.
Just helping them.
And I was sharing with them mantras that I was using, because I'd worked with one of Deepak Chopra's proteges.
I love his
stuff,
I
started, I started integrating Ayurvedic principles.
Was when you were in New Mexico? Was that when you started doing
this?
That?
I'd actually moved back to New York at this point. And so people were seeing that I was doing this living in New York City, right? So like work, play hard. Right. And so they were like, wow, okay, you're doing this living in the middle of Manhattan, and you're experiencing a calm and a serenity and a well-being that you had never experienced before. How are you doing this?
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com, or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Okay, hello, I'm Lisa Roberts-Hurd. I am the founder and CEO of Food Body Soul, an integrative health, nutrition, and lifestyle company. We work with companies ranging from Yelp, Hey Mama, Soho House, to private individuals. We offer a culinary-driven wellness platform and coaching program.
All right, Lisa, thanks. Welcome to the podcast. I appreciate you coming on. I know we had a little technical difficulties. That was my fault, but I want this to sound good, for whoever's listening, and to promote your business and sound good for me too, I guess. So that's
great.
Why I'm,
thanks, Mitch.
I appreciate coming on. Now, we met through We met through Geraldine's group in London, right?
We did. Yes. It's Good. Such a great networking group. And I've met wonderful people such as yourself.
Yeah, it's nice to have international contacts. I guess that's a silver lining of COVID, right? With all the loss, we've connected all over the world now.
We really have. It's it's amazing. I mean, I've seen my business expand literally like around the country and in different parts of the world too.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. All right. So today's about you and your company. So maybe we could go back a little bit and tell me about your background, where you grew up and, you know, your journey to get to the really the health and wellness stuff that you're doing for all of your clients now. Does that make sense?
Yes, let's do it. Good, so I all right, wonderful. So I grew up in Connecticut and then my family moved to Boston and Nantucket. And then I started to live abroad in Italy and actually the UK. And so my journey was that I grew up with a single mom and my sister. And, you know, I have to say that taking care of ourselves was actually a huge priority. My path, though, was that I became a classical archaeologist and I specialized in ancient food and wine production. Wow. I went to Tufts for my bachelor's and I started that journey there. And that's really where I fell in love with it. In fact, if I really go back, my love of wine started when I was 4 years old. And I would see the beautiful bottles and I thought, how can I create this in my own life?
Right. Well, so you're a wine and food archaeologist? I didn't even know that was like such a thing.
Yes. So today you could call me a culinary archaeologist.
Wow.
And I'm also a professionally trained chef. And so when I was four, I was enamored by all the beautiful wine bottles and glasses. And I started to insist that I drink red grape juice in a wine glass and I would toast it all the family parties. And so
your mom's
that
probably thinking like, oh boy, here we go. Starting early.
Oh boy, here we go. Party girl.
Age four.
Exactly.
That's funny.
And so, but my fascination with, I realize now practice and ritual became very much embedded in what I became interested in. And so the food and wine experience was something that I loved to create even as a child. I mean, not necessarily the wine part, even though I had the fascination, but really creating like an entertaining experience where people could break bread and my sister and I would love to cater our family's parties. And so that started at a very early age and reading cookbooks and watching shows like buying Martha Stewart's entertaining books.
Yeah, my wife was like that too. And she's a great cook and she does enjoy too, like holiday times and having people over and, you know, it's an experience. It's not just eating. And I think that's great. Yes.
And it is that multi-sensory experience, which I didn't necessarily have words to put to at that age. But then as I grew older, I started to have more words to put to it. And that's what really attracted me to archaeology and the practice of food and wine in ancient cultures. And that took me to Oxford University, where I wrote my master's thesis on Dionysus, the Greek god of wine. And what's really fast, I know, who knew, right? But what's really fascinating about that is that the food and wine experience really transcends, it's part of the culture, it's part of the literature, it's part of the meal experience, it's part of human interaction, so community. And then also, it's also part of the economy. So it was a very multidisciplinary experience of looking at how food and wine and practices and rituals really transcend just, oh, this is what I'm going to eat. This is what I'm going to drink.
Right. Well, thousands of years ago, right? Wine with alcohol was like, you knew that it wasn't bad because it wasn't like it was juice that would go bad. It was alcohol. So it was generally safer to drink, right?
It was safer to drink than water. It was safer to drink. It was a much safer substance for people to be able to consume. And so for me, I started looking at, all of the, how the ancients fed themselves, not just with food, but also in terms of their lifestyle habits, those practices, mm-hmm. more mindfulness, more, more sense of community, more connection, and prioritizing that and really looking at how the morning was a really important time when people woke up, and that is how they set their day up. By the foods that they ate, by the practices. So it may have been a spiritual practice for them, but it really set the tone for the day. And so 15 years ago, I was a champagne drinking classical archaeologist. I was also working as a sommelier in New York and Nantucket and in the United Kingdom. And I had a wine segment on television. But what was happening was that I was imploding with anxiety, depression, ADD, autoimmune conditions, and chronic pain. And so that was a telltale sign to me that there is something going on, and right. I needed to pause.
There's a lot of it stress related?
And a lot of it was stress related, yes. And I also started to learn that, there were certain foods that weren't necessarily serving me. And so sure. I found out that I had a gluten allergy and I have celiac disease, and that was going untreated, that I really didn't metabolize dairy.
Right.
And
not sure we all metabolize dairy very well.
Right. Exactly.
Like after you're born and you're off of milk, that probably should be like the last dairy. I don't know anybody in the dairy business. I'm not going to insult these people, but it's like the last time you should have dairy, right?
It's true. It's so true.
Yeah.
So despite outward appearances of, having a successful career and seemingly doing well in the world. Here I was imploding on the inside. I mean, quite frankly, I was a hot mess.
Yeah.
And so I needed to, so for me, I moved out to Santa Fe. I left
New York.
That'll
lower your stress. That'll do it.
And I sought out like every shaman and healer that I possibly could. And they had their smoking wands and 6-foot shafts of crystal,
yeah.
And I embarked on, a spiritual journey. And what it ended up coming down to was that I started really researching like these ancient cultures that I'd been studying for years, like going down to the biodynamic farms in Peru, where they only use organic methods of farming. And
right.
even in New Mexico, a lot of farms, they don't know any other way.
Right. It's not they're overprocessed and they got all these chemicals to use. They're not going to use them because they don't have them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I started really looking at, Native American culture as well, and just indigenous cultures around the world. And I realized that is more in alignment with like my constitution and my spirit. And I really slowed down and I rolled up my sleeves in the kitchen. I started doing a lot of research. I started looking at what was in the food that I was eating, not just, am I eating food for McDonald's? Because that was actually never really my path. For me, I ate well.
Right.
I just wasn't eating well for me. And
right.
and I wasn't eating organic either. I was eating, a few things here and there organic, but
right.
15 years ago, it wasn't nearly as mainstream.
No,
as
it was
now.
All processed and overprocessed. And we growing up thinking about it, you just don't. I mean, I wasn't a big McDonald's person either. I don't do very well with fast food and things like that and high fats
right.
and stuff. But so that doesn't replace, like, you go to the supermarket and you buy what you think is good food, and it's just so overprocessed. We get all these problems now, I think. But, it's like the food industry and how it developed. It was a capitalist industry. It wasn't this industry that said, let's feed everybody really well. Maybe the restaurant businesses and sommelier and all that stuff. But the general food that goes in the grocery store. Yeah. In those days when we were young, there wasn't all these organic choices.
No, there weren't. And I remember when my first job was actually, and I worked there for 3 years, it was a farm stand and it was a farm in Connecticut. And I remember a woman coming in one day, and this was back in the 80s. And she said, "Do you have organic produce?" And I never
you know what that was, right?
Produce before.
You're like, isn't it all organic? Comes from the earth, right? It must be organic.
Exactly. And yeah, I was like, what is organic? You know, here I was a teenager.
Right.
Yeah. Like,
it's farm. I guess it's, yeah.
Exactly. And she explained it to me. She said, there's no pesticides, there's no chemical fertilizers. And I thought, well, I think the farmer uses really natural. Right.
You're like, I don't know. But, you know, in those days, the health food stores were like these weird places. Like I had a friend whose mom was very into organic and health food. You had to like find these little health food shops. It wasn't like you go to Whole Foods nowadays. It was this subculture, you know, that nobody really knew a lot about.
It really was. It was very hippie. And if you went into any of these natural food stores, they had their particular very green, earthy smell.
Right. Yeah. Kind of like wheatgrass combined with some other things, right? And my friend's house used to smell like that. I'll be like, oh, I don't want to eat this stuff. And now it's like, well, we eat, you know?
Right. Exactly. So I love that we're coming back full circle. And I feel as though like this past year has, you know, it's been a true reset for us. There's been, of course, you know, so much tragedy and loss, but it has allowed the earth and I believe us as part of the earth, as part of the earth's ecosystem, it's allowed us to reset too and slow down. And so many people were forced to cook at home.
Right.
And to really look at, okay, what am I eating and what's going to benefit my immune system the most?
Yeah.
What's going to benefit my digestion?
I hear people don't have as many allergies as they normally do. Those are down because they're not exposed to other people and they're eating better. It makes a big difference. It really does.
It makes a huge amount of difference. And some people have had the opportunity to rest more. I mean, I personally am exhausted. I love to cook. It's my favorite thing. I'm so sick of the dishes though.
I do the dishes. I'm a terrible cook. I'm not a cook. My wife's like, you know, do you want to cook? I'm like, no, I'm not going to burn the food. So, but I do the dishes. She doesn't do the dishes.
Oh, that's great. It's nice that you have that partnership.
I force her out of the kitchen afterward. I'm like, listen, I can enjoy good, well-cooked food. I don't have to leave her with the mess. You know, it's not nice.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I love that. And so for me, what happened was that once I rolled up my sleeves in the kitchen and I really started looking at food as medicine, as a source of healing, it was amazing how my health, my mental health, my physical health, my emotional health, and also my spiritual health really started to transform. And like I said, this was 15 years ago. And today we have so many resources. I mean, I really was my own guinea pig and I had to be my own guide as well. So I really started to apply those skills of being an archaeologist. And so I was trained to find patterns and to, like, you know, brush away and dig through dirt and debris to reveal beauty and to reveal like what was left behind. And for me, like I was on that journey of rediscovering and in many ways discovering for the first time, like who I really was on the inside in terms of like what my health required, who I was without substances. And I don't mean just like wine or other chemical substances, but also like who I was beyond the pesticides, the processed foods, because that also creates a filter for us.
The sugar. And we were all addicts. Yeah. We are such addicts. It's ridiculous.
It truly is. And once I started to remove that, and let me tell you, it was uncomfortable. And in some ways it was painful. And once I started to like move that away and start to toss out some patterns that really weren't serving me anymore. So the sugar, the amounts of wine that I was drinking.
Right. That's the one thing the pandemic did to a lot of people. Yeah. I see a lot more wine bottles at recycling day
and that's the thing. A lot of people, and I feel as though that's another part of my coaching practice is, yes, it's culinary driven wellness. It's getting people in the kitchen. It's like helping people really discover like a more conscious, less stressed way of life,
yeah,
a more healthful way of life, and approaching like, what is their recipe for living? What are the ingredients that they need? And part of those ingredients is, you know, what's best for your like mental and spiritual health.
Yeah. And I think we're going more towards like what's going on, like in other parts of the world, like in Europe, where they work to live. They don't live to work. And we raised this country based on work, work, work. You know, you go to work, you go early, you stay late, you this, you that, you want to impress the boss and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I, you know, it hasn't served us in the long term. And then, you know, what's the point at the end, right? We're all dead anyway. So if you don't enjoy the journey and have a healthy way of living, it's just, it begs the question, right?
It does. And like living and eating healthfully, like you don't have to compromise. And that's what I think we're all learning. And
right.
I remember many years ago, Marianne Williamson said that we were in the 11th hour. And this was 15, 20 years ago. And like we reached that 11th hour and we've been building up to it, right?
Right?
We've been building up to it. Like the collective consciousness has been moving in the direction of, you know, I mean, look at the wellness economy, right? Plant-based foods. I mean, it's like, it's billions and trillions of dollars that people are ready to invest in their mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being. And for the first time in,
so it's becoming more mainstream.
Millennia.
It's not so bohemian
it is.
Anymore, you know.
It's
kind of weird,
it's
but
not,
it's, you know.
Right. It's not about Berkeley, California and Haight-Ashbury. I mean, it's like people
Birkenstocks,
are living,
you know. Yeah.
Right. It's like, right. You know, Birkenstocks has gone mainstream and they're partnering with celebrities.
Like, yeah, I grew up going, my parents have a house up in upstate New York in the French side of the Catskills. So I grew up going to Woodstock and all that stuff. And it was like going backwards in time in the 60s. But now it's like a hipster place. I mean, everybody's up there and they're all, it's not so, you know, abnormal. It's mainstream.
No,
you know, it's helping people.
It's not. And so I think what people are finding is that one, you don't have to compromise on taste
for sure.
When it comes to foods that are more body honoring, more just that honor who you are and who you truly are.
Right.
Living healthfully, you don't have to compromise on that.
Right.
You don't have to compromise on joy and spontaneity. There's so many modalities. And I think what's important is that just because someone on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or Clubhouse or whatever medium is out there right now,
right,
what works for them doesn't necessarily have to be the recipe for you.
Right. I mean, that's the problem, right? We mainstream everything,
right.
Even schooling and teaching. Everyone's different and everybody's body's different and reacts different. I guess it's not a gluten intolerance. I have like a dairy, like a heavy fat intolerance. Like if I can't eat things like cream, ice cream, forget it. Cheese, I haven't had it in years. Now there's alternatives, but I can eat a steak here
right.
and there once in a while if it's not, I'm not stressed. But there's
right.
like no treatment for it. I just have to eat a certain way and stay away from certain things that other people can have. You know, it's just the way our bodies work, right?
Right. And I'm the same way. And when I'm working with clients, a lot of times they'll come to me and they'll say, why can't I eat what my husband or my child or my best friend
right.
can eat? It's not fair. Well, you know what? We have a choice on how we can perceive something. And if you can look, so for me, I don't see it as like, I can't have gluten or I can't have
right,
dairy.
Like you're giving
or
up
I,
something.
I see it as, wow, my body is an incredible barometer.
Right.
And my body knows like what is best for it. And like, that's a gift because not a lot of people are attuned to that.
They're not.
And
that's the biggest problem.
It is.
Eating all the wrong things and they don't even pay attention to it.
Well, and we fight it. And when we're fighting something, so the more we resist something, the more it persists. So if I'm getting headaches from something and I feel
right.
muscular pain and I'm congested.
Right.
If I'm going to, I have a choice.
There's no question about it. Right.
Right. I can be free and free myself of what I know is causing that and feel amazing and have the energy and the presence to show up for who, for whom, and what is most important in my life. And to be able to be creative and passionate and like really enjoy life in, you know, just a spontaneous and delicious way.
Right.
Or I can continue to bemoan the fact that, wow, I can't have gluten, poor me.
Right.
I can't have dairy, poor me. And I can't eat processed foods, poor me.
Yeah.
What would I rather have? Do I want to go keep going along that path? Or do I want to have the more like uplifted, like, elevated
who would you,
path?
You know, I think that's a really good point because there's a lot of people who would say, well, you know, I can't be like, I mean, Lisa's just very positive. She's a positive person and she's got this attitude. I can't be like that. People say that about me. And I do a lot of reading and studying on the laws of attraction and everything. We live in an attracting universe. There's no word for like distracting things, right? You don't send things away. So the more you don't want something, right, whether it's health or wellness or happiness or money or whatever it is, you're just telling the world, send it to me. It doesn't work that way that you say, I don't like this. So you focus on it. You know, your vibrational energy will send out the negative energy to the world and that will connect with the other negative things. People think this is like hocus pocus, but it's total science. It's going to come back to you. You're going to find all the bad things that you're worrying about on a constant basis. And then you're going to miss, like you just said, all the richness in life, the things that you can experience, your children, your family, the food you want to eat, wine, whatever it is, it's all passing you by while you're worrying about all the things that you are attracting to yourself. And it's unfortunate, you know, and I'm trying to get my kids to understand that as they get older, that it's not just, you know, the power of positive thinking. It's a real thing.
A real thing. And, you know, I'll tell you, like, I don't drink wine anymore. My body doesn't metabolize it anymore. And here I had like devoted my career to, and I had this really beautiful wine collection.
But it doesn't make you feel well.
And I discovered that it wasn't serving me anymore. And, you know, I had to grieve that because I had devoted my career to that.
It was a big part of your life. Sure.
It was. And I needed to make a career shift and a career change. And so I had to go through that process of, wow, you know, I'm disappointed about this. And then I had the choice of spiraling into that. Woe is me. My life is over.
That's not going to help you.
Or, wow, maybe the universe is presenting me with an opportunity. And so, and I'll tell you that I wasn't born a positive thinker. No. I was not born into a family of positive thinkers.
I find that surprising because you are a very positive person.
Well, thank you. And, you know, and so that's why I want to share this with other people who feel as though like I'll never be able to be like Mitch or Lisa and have this, you know, rosy view of the world. It's something that I really had to practice and cultivate over time. And so, you know, I have a wonderful family, but they are, you know, it was always, what is the worst case scenario? Let's marinate in it.
Yeah, that's
and
I grew up in a Jewish family. They're all like that.
Okay, well, I grew up in a Catholic family.
Oh, yeah, they're the same. I know. They're all, it's all guilt-laden and oh, woe me. I was the same as you. I was shy when I was young. I was not introverted. I was not comfortable in my own skin. And it wasn't until high school then and into college and things and learning and seeing the world that I mean, look, I guess we both could have ended up on the other end of the spectrum, right? Not positive. But we didn't. We saw something and
It's true. And when I have setbacks today, they appear as setbacks.
Yeah, setbacks are relative now.
Right, exactly. I really like to look at them as, okay, where is the gift in this?
Right.
Where is the opportunity in this?
Yeah.
And
yeah, there's no failures in life. There's just learning opportunities, growth opportunities. And if you look at it that way, won't be so bad when things don't go well the way you want them to go, you know?
Right. And I was actually talking with a client last night about this. And it's like, we have that. So this year, I think, taught all of us like the resiliency that we have, that deep well of resiliency. And here, so many people, whether they lost their jobs or they lost loved ones, they lost their home, whatever, lost income, whatever it might have been, like they've been able to tap a deep well of resiliency that maybe they didn't even know they had.
Yeah.
And for me, this year really reminded me of when I reached that low point with my health, when I had to like really make that decision. You know what? Wine isn't working for me anymore. My career in wine is really not serving me anymore. I'm super sad about that. Just like this year,
well, you devoted a large portion of your life to it, you know?
Right. And I was sad to give up, you know, when I found out that I couldn't eat gluten and dairy anymore.
There were things that I was pizza. Sad about. People are like, oh, are you so sad you can't eat pizza? I go, no, I'm not sad about it. I feel terrible when I eat pizza. Why?
Right.
You know?
Right. And so I think that this year has been like so many people have tapped a creativity that they didn't know, a strength that they didn't know.
Right.
And, you know, and I think that the silver lining in this is that we can all carry ourselves forward with that strength and that resiliency, and be able to step back and look at situations and say, you know what? I have a choice here.
Right.
I have a choice of looking at this from a black cloud doomsday perspective.
Right, exactly.
Or I have the choice of, okay, you know what? A certain way worked for a really long time.
Right.
It reached its expiration date.
Right.
And now the universe is bringing me an opportunity to like tap into something that I didn't even know was really there. Or maybe it was there when I was a kid or a young adult or at a different time in my life.
Life and, didn't beat the crap out of us for 40, 50 years, 60 years, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
and that's...
Do you think people bounce higher than they give themselves credit for? Like,
I think,
right? I think they can deal with more than they believe they can.
I think so. And I think that, not to keep harping on this past year, but I think that this year has shown us that.
Yeah.
That
well, gave people permission to take risks, right? Because now you can blame it on someone else. It doesn't work out. People are not afraid to take risks because they don't want to, they're embarrassed. I left my job and now I got nothing. Well, you didn't have to leave a job. They laid you off. So now you can take a risk and, you know?
Right. But it's so true. And you know what, like for me, like this year really gave me permission and allowed me to really take the time to like completely move my business online. I have to say that 90% of my clients here, I moved from New York City to Connecticut. So I'm back in Connecticut after 30 years.
Here you are.
I'm enjoying the country.
Growing your own stuff. You're growing you have an herb garden and all that stuff.
Yes. So I'm getting ready to plant.
The very New England thing, right?
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm launching a line of sauces, plant-based sauces.
Oh, good.
I'm coming out with a cookbook. 90% of my clients are in California, by the way.
Right. That's funny. But they don't need to be here anymore, you know?
Right, exactly. They don't need to be here.
Yeah.
So I'm working with, I just did two corporate events with Yelp. One for the greater Yelp community members, which was so fun. It was, oh my God, they were so terrific. It's amazing how a community and connection can come across even over a screen.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21,000. That's LAW to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
And so I'm able to share everything I've learned with a bigger community. I'm partnering with a beta program that a large multinational corporation is launching, which I'm really excited about, but I can't share any more than that right now. Right. And I have 4 and 6 week series with other companies that are all well-being based. So there is, yes, the culinary component, there's the nutrition component, and then there's just general well-being lifestyle, very practical tools that people can implement into their lives. So everything from, you know, snacks, easy snacks that you can make at home, to 5 items that you can order on Amazon or another retailer that will change your life. So if you're working from home and you're like, what am I going to give my child who's on Zoom as a snack or myself as a snack, but I don't have time or the inclination to even, you know, slice an apple with peanut butter or almond butter, you know, what's something that I can easily open up and say, hey, here's something. And you know what? I feel good about this too. It's going to give you energy. It's going to keep your brain clear. And, you know, it's going to be able to give you that last push for those last couple of hours of work before you're ready to get back into the kitchen again.
Right, exactly. Well, so let me ask you this question, because this is an entrepreneurial podcast, right? That's what we talk about. You're a business owner. So, and you're already getting into it. Tell me how, so how did, what was the process of you saying, okay, you know, I'm eating better, learning, taking care of myself. Now, maybe you're a water sommelier now instead of a wine. I don't know.
Right.
That's a career path for you too.
I would say a chocolate sommelier.
A chocolate sommelier. Point. Perfect. That's healthy for you too. As long as it's dark chocolate. And
yeah, completely.
How did this start developing into a business where you said, hey, I want to help other people. And how did you go about that? And then we could talk more about your company, how people can interact with you. But how did it go from you to a business?
So for me, what happened was that people started like seeing a transformation in me. I started talking about just with friends, because this was before really, I mean, there was a little bit of Facebook, but before social media really took hold, it was just really conversations, and people were seeing that I was able to go off of some medications that I'd been on, inhalers that I'd been on to treat bronchial asthma. Not to say that food and lifestyle will completely clear people of having to
but it gets rid of a lot.
Right. It really does. And so anxiety started coming down. My health improved exponentially. I just started looking healthier. And so people started asking me, what are you doing? And then, I started sharing with them, and I started taking friends to Whole Foods, and I started teaching friends how to cook, and I started doing meditation with other people, and I started doing breathing exercises.
Just helping them.
And I was sharing with them mantras that I was using, because I'd worked with one of Deepak Chopra's proteges.
I love his
stuff. I started integrating Ayurvedic principles.
Was when you were in New Mexico? Was that when you started doing
this? I'd actually moved back to New York at this point. And so people were seeing that I was doing this living in New York City, right? So like work, 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 play hard. And so they were like, wow, okay, you're doing this living in the middle of Manhattan and you're experiencing a calm and a serenity and a well-being that you had never experienced before. How are you doing this? And then I started working with a friend of mine who he was actually introduced to me by a mutual friend, and we became colleagues. And he was one of the, he was on Dr. Oz's dream team as one of the top interventionists in the country. His name's Brad Lamb. He's written a number of books, and one of them was called Just 10 Pounds. And so he asked me to do all the recipes and be the culinary nutrition expert. And that book helped over 1 million viewers on the Dr. Oz show lose over 500,000 pounds.
Wow. And you did, there were his recipes in the book and you made all the food?
No, they were my recipes.
Oh, they were all your recipes. Okay.
Yes. I started working with a number of publications, including the Huffington Post, Clean Plates. There was a incredible lifestyle magazine called So Be Fit that was part of South Beach Culture in Miami. And they were all really at the forefront of clean eating. Okay. And so I started doing interviews and I started doing recipe makeovers and I on AOL, a number of different publications. And so people started noticing it. And then I contributed to, I was a featured chef in Healthy Eating During Pregnancy by Erica Lenkart and Brooke Alpert.
So you were kind of gaining a voice in the industry.
I was really gaining a voice. And then I started working with some of Brad's clients who were in the addictions field. And he and I were really on the same page when it came to the power of nutrition and eating for your constitution,
right,
for your brain and for your emotional well-being as part of relapse prevention. And I have to say that this is just starting to get traction. Like treatment centers and corporations are just starting to see this as something to invest in when it comes to employee well-being, staff well-being, and then going back to treatment centers as like mental health. So treating mental health, treating addiction.
Right.
And I'm not saying that it's the panacea and the silver bullet.
No, but you don't want to keep your employees going with Red Bull and power bars, you know?
Right. Exactly. But it is, you know, eating in a nutritionally powerful way and like living and breathing in a way that is where you can slow down and reset and start your day with, even if you took like 2 to 3 minutes just to get quiet, keep your phone off, just take those, you know, drink your coffee. It doesn't matter, but just
short
like
meditation
to do exactly just to like let the day come in. All of these different lifestyle practices really have a tremendous impact. And we have the ancients and indigenous cultures to back that up, what science is now proving. Right. So they can do brain scans of this. But when we eat in a nutritionally powerful way, you know, that it can be a key element in our recovery and healing, whether it's addiction, whether it's mental health, whether it's just like you're dealing with a lot of inflammation and your body's in chronic pain. Like all of these, like it allows us to have better health. It allows our relationships to be so much better as well.
Of course.
Because that everything's based on relationships. You know, whether you're sending off an email, a text, or you're communicating with people.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Yeah, I think that what's the Japanese term, Kaizen, about making little changes that matter a lot, because usually drastic changes, like innovation, is very rare. Everybody thinks everything's innovative, but it's not. It's right. They're usually little minor changes. People make big change in their life. They're like, oh, I got to change everything. They usually fall off the wagon. But if they just meditate for 15 minutes, work out for half an hour, a couple of times a week, you don't have to be, I'm going to the gym every day. All of a sudden you'll never make it. you know?
It's true. And I'm a firm believer in little changes with big impact.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed with my clients, and this is how I first started making the changes. I would make one little change. Maybe it was like having a glass of water in the morning when I woke up while I was making my coffee. Like that small change can have huge impact, because then it creates curiosity into, oh, wow, you know, I feel really good from that change. I feel more hydrated. My brain feels clearer. You know, maybe I'll try that plant-based dish, or, you know, maybe I'll try that 2 minutes of meditation today. I'll put on a guided meditation for 2 minutes, and, or I won't turn my phone on first thing in the morning.
Right. Or turn it off at night. And it just creates
that cure. Yes. Turning it off at night. Yeah. You know, like having a proper wind down practice for yourself is, you know,
I've texted people, maybe even Geraldine, cause it's, you know, it's much later there at, you know, 9:30 or something about something. I figured, you know what, she'll get to it in the morning and we'll deal with it tomorrow. So I send her the text, and then I'm turning my phone beeps. I'm like, Geraldine, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. What are you doing? You know, so she's up in the middle of the night. Not her
right.
phone. So yeah, definitely. Right. You got to be able to put down the devices, or we're all addicted. I you want to hear something funny? I'll put this on the mic. I was in the men's room the other day in my building, and there's a guy at the urinal, and he is looking at his phone. So his hands, so he's holding, I'm like, and I notice I'm like a little addicted to the phone. Like literally he's going through looking through social media. He's taking these in the men's room. You know, I'll never forget that. That's stuck in my mind the whole week. This is a Monday. What is the matter with people?
It's, you know what? And I have to say, so when I first joined the new social media app Clubhouse, I allowed them to send notifications.
You have to have an iPhone. I got to get my daughter's mini powered up or something. Yeah.
I have to say that I, you know, not to diverge into that, but digress. I've made some great contacts.
Yeah. I hear crazy things are going on. I'll get on.
Yeah. Really. I mean, it's been really terrific. I mean, if you're able to parse through some of the noise. But I started getting all of these notifications, and I had to turn the notifications off.
Just because you signed up, basically?
Well, I signed up, but I also allowed them to send me notifications. So every interest group that I had indicated and every club that I had joined, I mean, it was a bombardment. And this isn't against Clubhouse. It was like, okay, I don't have notifications for Instagram or Facebook.
I don't do those either, because your phone never stops buzzing.
It never stops buzzing. And then my wife actually posted something on Twitter yesterday, and it blew up on Twitter. And she said, she was like, oh my God, she's like, this is really addictive, because she's not big into Twitter, but she got like, it was unbelievable the way it blew up. And she said, I'm going to have to be really careful with this.
Yeah. It's just nuts. Well, as long as you're not like, you know, doing it from the bathroom. I mean, that's
right. That was a great
talk about meditation. Isn't that the time where you're just supposed to do what you're doing? And, you know, just, you know, the world stops and nothing's going to happen in that 14 seconds. I don't know how long, whatever.
I know. And yeah. It's taking that pause. I think that's really important, and being okay with it.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know, the world isn't going to end in those 14 seconds that you take that pause
No, not at all.
I find that my world is actually, when I set myself up in a, you know, whether it's taking, you know, 10 minutes in the middle of the day to take a walk around the yard, or if I just take that pause, it's amazing how things can reset and my perspective changes. And, you know, and that's part of my coaching practice, is really teaching people these practical tools of
coping.
You know, little changes with big impact.
Sure.
And so there is the, you know, where I go in and host culinary workshops or wellness workshops. It's really allowing people to understand that you know, they too can integrate this into their life, and it doesn't have to be all or nothing.
Right.
Like they can do even those 5 minutes makes a big difference.
Right. Well, that's what, you know, that's what a lot of these people that are becoming entrepreneurs now or starting their own businesses or whatever, you really want to make that part of your, I don't want to get back to the business thing, but you know, make it part of the way you live. Like you're, if you're doing it because you don't have a choice or whatever, but you're going to dive into whatever it is you're interested in doing, you know, make sure that it has a positive impact on your life, you know, because there will be stresses, you know, things that'll happen during the day, during the week that you don't have control over, right? That's what the meditation's about resetting. Some days you just got to like get off the mountain, you know, it's just not going well. And if you don't reset yourself, and you're just attracting more bad stuff and more difficulties. You're like, what more can people throw at me? So you just go home, you know, go to sleep, go for a walk around the block, like you said. And I think a lot of people they don't realize what's happening to them that particular day.
It's true. You know, sometimes doing nothing is taking the greatest action.
It's true. You know how I run my practice? So if somebody sends me an email or something in the morning, and it's some panic thing, I usually don't react very quickly because 9 times out of 10, it resolves itself and is not as big of a deal. And then so if I don't respond to your email and I finish my emails, I find another email 40 minutes later that's saying, oh, Mitch, it's Lisa, you know, disregard my last email. I figured that out, or this resolved itself or whatever. And so 9 times out of 10, I don't have to deal with half the things that come my way because I don't react to them. Like, oh, you know, like it's really important. It is important, but just the natural of things, it resolves itself. That's what happens with things. They go away. They're not big deals. They're not a big deal.
That's exactly it. And I found that. And even yesterday, I had written to my son's doctor that I was like, oh, we need a note saying that he doesn't have COVID. She's like, but I just sent you the test results. I was like, oh, no, the school nurse is going to need a letter.
And we went through that too.
And one last week, he did need a letter this week because we had gone away. You know what? I wrote her back a half hour later and I said, oh, we don't need the letter.
Yeah, see, there you go.
To your point.
Right. And the doctor's like, what do I need to do this for? You know, they got a lot of things going on. It's pretty funny.
Right.
Well, I love what you're doing because not only you have a lot of energy and, you know, positive attitude, but there is so much, you know, the more I learned about healthy eating and positive attitudes and things like that, I see all the things that we've been doing wrong for, you know, so many years. My wife has a bit of a diet clinic and it's very, like you said, keto based. Sugar seems to be like the baseline for all these things that are problems in our life. Like when it comes to eating,
right.
It's all hidden in everything. It's like, it's not called sugar. It's called this, but that doesn't count as sugar. And you know, sugar free is not really sugar free. It's just got something else in it. That's your body's treating like sugar, you know? So I think that, as you learn that stuff, like when I had mentioned Tom King, I had on the show, the keto guy gone keto, and he discovered the whole thing. And you meet him, as I told you, I'll introduce you to him. He's this skinny guy. He was like 300 some odd pounds at one point and changed his life and realized through certain things he got exposed to and, you know, discoveries, I guess, in his life where he said, you know, and now he's got a company, big company. They make a stevia type of a product. They make all kinds of keto sauces and this and that. So, yeah. And it's like there are alternatives and better ways to eat now. But I think people need what you're giving them. They can't do it on their own. They need coaching and guidance and help, you know?
Right. And I find that it's really great for accountability. And I work with teams. So I like to, when I'm working with my clients, I like them to think of me as part of their dream team. And so they may have their doctor, they may have even a dietitian, they may have a therapist, you know, I mean, it doesn't, their accountant, their attorney. Right. And so I provide that health and nutrition based accountability for them. And so it's really helping them bring together that holistic 360 integrative model so that their wheelhouse is full. And so maybe they're working with a physician and a dietitian on something, they may have, you know, a very serious chronic health condition.
Right.
But those practitioners don't necessarily work with them on a weekly basis. So right. maybe they see them, you know, once a month, or, and I provide that it may be even for some clients, it's daily accountability. It's that daily check-in. And for other clients, it's every week, and others it's every other month or once a month. It really depends. And some clients, they start off in a very concentrated, we'll have, you know, pre-COVID, I would have called it like a VIP day, where it's an immersive day where we're together. It might be a weekend.
And that's with that's, multiple people, not just one person. That's like a,
sometimes it's just with one person. Oh, okay. Yeah. I will work very intensely with one person on creating a reboot, refresh for them to get them started. Or they may have, you know, maybe they had gone to a wellness center like Canyon Ranch or Miraval, sure. or had worked with practitioners, and they're like, you know what, I really need a reboot in this area. And we'll do that. We'll get them, really create, you know, I'm an archaeologist, I create a field guide for them.
That's a good word. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. We create their field guide, their playbook, that is individual to them, their lifestyle, and like what's going to work for them best nutritionally. So maybe their doctor gave them guidance, maybe their dietitian did, maybe whatever it may be. And maybe it's their accountant gave them guidance to, let's be more present and aware around your finances. And I'm not coaching them in the financial piece, but I am coaching them in the health, well-being, and being more present to what makes up a really full and joyful life for them.
Okay. So let me ask you some business questions then, right?
Yes.
So how do you, so you started at this business, you got a following, and you do individual coaching, and you're right. And so how do you market your business? Like, what do you do on a regular basis to connect with people and stay in touch with people and obtain your customers like any other business owner?
I have a mailing list. So right. I have an email list. I send out a newsletter. I have an Instagram account that,
you post stuff too, right?
That I post videos, I post photos, I post recipes. I have foodbodysoul.net. I do podcasts, and I have to say that it's also been like cultivating relationships over the years. So there are, you know, people I've worked with repeatedly who have given me referrals over the years.
Yeah, sure.
And
centers of influence type of stuff.
Exactly. And then I belong to a few networking groups that have been so remarkable. There's one networking group. There's Geraldine's that I absolutely love. And then there's a working moms networking group that has been really instrumental for me. It's called Hey Mama, and they are so incredibly supportive of, you know, female founders who happen to be moms, working moms who are, you know, maybe they've started their own business. Maybe they, you know, it doesn't matter where they are. Some moms are stay-at-home moms. I would say the majority are working moms, or maybe they're working part-time right now, but there's a lot of C-suite. I mean, the women who are part of this community are, so many of them are rock stars in their industries. I mean, they're really, really powerful women. And, you know, I've developed some really incredible relationships with mentors. Uh-huh. I think that's really important. And as I mentioned, I like to create my client's dream team. Well, I have a dream team of my own,
right,
too.
Right, I'm sure you do.
I do. So I feel as though it's really important to develop those relationships, because I don't do this in a bubble.
Right. Well, you're not going to be successful if you do.
Right.
Right.
So really developing those relationships.
Now, I had two questions for you. One is, do you have a business plan or some sort of strategic plan, or how do you plan things? Everyone gives me a different answer. And then how did you build, and how do you build your marketing list, your email list?
Okay. So I can answer that from two different perspectives. Okay. One is, so for my coaching business, it's really just relationship. Most of it's relationships that I've built over the years. For my new company that I'm launching, I've put together an investor deck. And so that's, I feel as though I'm launching into a whole new category. I'm meeting people in the food world that are just incredibly dynamic, because I'm launching a sauce company. And so okay. I'm meeting people in the food tech space. I'm meeting people in the venture capital space. I'm on Crunchbase looking up VCs.
Right. Yeah. You're dealing with all that stuff, right?
Right. Right. So I'm working with the new, chief marketing officer. I'm connecting with, so I just connected with, I don't want to get their name wrong, but it's like the Connecticut Women's Business Development Council.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Every state has, I've connected with SCORE in New York. Sure. I was working with them before I moved to Connecticut. And so just really tapping into networks that way. And that's how I'm putting together my list of 100 potential investors through family offices, angel investor individuals.
So you're talking to angels and VCs and family, friends and family. You got the whole thing going on.
I am. I really am. So right. For me, it's like I'm a researcher. I love it. I'm crunching the numbers, getting super comfortable with spreadsheets and putting all of this. So that's how.
Yeah. So that division or company, you have to have a business plan and pitch deck and all that stuff, because people want to see that if they're going to invest money in the company.
Exactly. So. Right. So for me, so one of the things that I talk to my clients about, and this is something that I apply in my own life and business, is when it comes to taking an action or not taking an action,
right?
I ask myself, how am I going to feel after I take this action?
Okay.
And that can be a motivating factor on days when I'm kind of like, maybe not in the mood to do this, or, I'm a little nervous to reach out to someone. Am I going to feel better inside if I've taken that action? And then on the flip side, sometimes, like, as we talked about, not taking an action is the rest.
Yeah. Like maybe today's just not the day. You're not mentally there. You already had four problems you didn't want to deal with, and you just got to take a deep breath. And yeah, isn't it amazing the things that happen? We go to bed, we got all kinds of issues. If you just put them aside and just clear your head and go to bed, your mind has a way of like solving problems and issues. I wake up some mornings with ideas about whatever problem or issue I was trying to tackle the day before. I'm like, I never really thought about that. I forgot this guy and I know him. I forgot Lisa, Lisa does that and Gerald. It's just like your brain is like working for you while you're sleeping. It's weird.
It's true. To go back to your question about how I build my
email list,
and another huge part that I didn't mention is that I've done so many collaborations, and those have been self-initiated collaborations. And I want to emphasize that, and going back to, do I take this action? Do I not take this action? How am I going to feel?
Right. Like, don't wait for people to come to you and say, hey, Lisa, would you do a chapter in my book? Right? Exactly.
As I mentioned, I've done collaborations with Soho House. I've Yelp. Actually, I was fortunate in that one. There are some where people have.
You get luck sometimes. But look, you know what? You play in traffic, you eventually get hit. That's the way I look at it.
Right. Exactly. So, but there are, I've done three events with Hey Mama, this networking group that I mentioned. They've become force reckoned with. I've worked with so many of my favorite wellness and food brands. I've collaborated with them. They've participated in my events that I've done.
We lost your audio. I don't know what happened. Your video's been freezing, your audio. I think you're having some cell phone issues. You there, Lisa? Hello? Are you back? Are you there?
Oh, hold on. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. You froze up a little bit. I can fix that when we do some editing, but.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So I guess going back to what I was saying was that I've done partnerships right. with Lululemon. And
but these are things that you initiated, meaning you approach them and say, hey, I'm looking to do this, or not always?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. So, but in most cases, I have said, hey, you know, Harmless Harvest coconut water, I would love to partner with you. Lululemon, I would love to partner with you. There's, you know, different organizations. And so that has taken initiative. And I think that's important. And then because I took initiative with some of these partnerships, I've had others reach out to me and say, hey, we would really love to partner with you on this.
Right. Cause they saw what you did with the coconut water company or Lululemon or whatever. And they're like, hey, reach out to Lisa because they're looking to do things too. Sure. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And
people
that's
overlook
how
that a lot, I think, in their business. Yeah.
They do. I think partnerships and collaborations are, one, they're fun.
Yeah.
Two, like, you're helping the other organization and they're helping you. Like, you're bringing together. And then in person, I did panels during COVID. I've done a number of online panels. I mean, those are all opportunities to like meet other people. And then right. I have a weekly clubhouse room where we talk about food and culinary hacks for founders.
Okay. So people
and
should I've, know that. Get on Clubhouse, find Lisa's room.
Right. So it's at Lisa Roberts Hurd on Clubhouse. Okay. And so, but I've met editors in chief of food magazines that way. I've met experts in food tech that way. And these are all the ways
and that builds your following and builds your email list and gets people out there. I mean, that's how I do the podcast. I do joint things with other podcasters. I've had social media influencers on there. I know they got 25,000 people on their Instagram. I only got 3. So I reach their group by doing collaborations, and a lot of even local businesses, I think they can do collaborations with like other local businesses. It doesn't have to be like you're working with people all over the world. If you're in the small community, you know,
It's true. It's like joining forces is going to make everyone stronger and have a greater reach so that they can be of greater service in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Lisa, I know you probably can go on for a week. You and I will talk about this stuff.
I know. I have my CMO appointment right now. This has been so great, Mitch. Thank you so much for having me on.
I appreciate coming on, man.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.